Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel, Kim and Chris. On today's Australian Open quarterfinals catch-up.
Zverev stuns Alcaraz to make the semis.
Sabalenka sets up a golf encounter.
And Rohan Bopanna becomes the oldest tennis world number one.
Kim, today is the 24th of January and we are here to catch up on the quarterfinals of the Australian Open at Tennis Weekly HQ. Our singles semi-finalists are set in the ladies and men's competitions. Novak Djokovic, Jannik Sinner, Daniil Medvedev, Sasha Zverev, Diana Yastremska, Qinwen Zheng, Coco Gauff and Aryna Sabalenka. That is your lineup. Some familiar names in there, some not so familiar names in there. How are we feeling?
I'm feeling quite confident and positive about the predictions I made prior to the AO starting, actually, Joel, because bar Yastremska and Zverev, I've got all of that lineup that you just
very
announced.
Well done.
Just Alcaraz and Świątek have let me down. They are not to be seen. But yeah, we'll obviously be getting into how this lineup got there, their quarterfinal action that we've seen over the past 2 days. And I think, you know, it's quite nice that, especially on the women's side, we have some surprise semi-finalists. It makes for an intriguing semi-final tomorrow.
It's so open and it means I can still use the phrase doing a Raducanu, because Yastremska coming through qualifying, I didn't realize how close she was going out in qualifying. All her matches were in like three sets. She was really battling away, but yeah, she's still in here. And I think I was reading Raducanu has got to this stage as a qualifier, Yastremska has got to this stage as a qualifier at a Grand Slam, and you know the other qualifier to get to this stage, semi-final of a Grand Slam since the year 2000.
I do actually, Joel. I'm not going to let you beat me on this one. It's Nadia Podoroska,
yes,
at the French Open.
Completely forgot.
That strange
completely
COVID
forgot about
year.
Her. Yeah. So yeah. So some names there. Yeah. So it's been very kind of surprising on that women's side, and almost very familiar, I think, on the men's side, because we were very, very close, weren't we, to having all top four seeds make the semi-finals, which I don't think has happened in quite a few years.
Yeah, it would have been top four if Alcaraz had made it, but Zverev's serve had something to say about that. So, yeah, that was, a highlight to watch that this morning. This morning UK time, it obviously went on quite late yet again, down under. But Joel, I hear that there's been some Vegemite chat the other day. I was listening in to you and Chris, and I enjoyed particularly your mention of Vegemite. And I'm a bit worried there about the task you're yeah, setting for us.
Well, I wanted to get Sunday. Your opinion. I wanted to get your opinion before we get into this episode, because I put it to Chris whether we should do a taste test of Vegemite in honor of Taylor Fritz making the quarterfinals. And so I was all excited thinking about that. And then I didn't actually realize we don't think we can get Vegemite in the UK.
I'm not sure, actually. As a non-Marmite / Vegemite sort of fan, I've never actively looked for it, but for the purpose,
this is all
of the pod,
more reason I want you to try it.
I'd be willing to do it for the purposes of the pod and our listeners to do a live taste test on the pod. So yeah, I'll do it for the purposes of the pod.
Would it be in the world foods aisle?
I would imagine so, but we don't get Tim Tams here, which, and I would love for them to be available. So maybe Vegemite also isn't available. I don't know. There's supposed to be a trade deal with Australia, but I'm not sure if that means we get Vegemite or not. We'll see. We'll keep you posted to see if we get some come Sunday. And we'll see who we get come Sunday for the men's final as well, because the semi-final lineup is now set, as you said, Joel. And today we had two of the quarterfinals. We had Sasha Zverev against Carlos Alcaraz, and we had Hubert Hurkacz against Daniil Medvedev. Let's start with that late night match with Zverev and Alcaraz. Zverev won this in four sets, and for the most part, he looked very comfortable, Joel, which I don't think many people were expecting. I think we either thought it was going to be much, much closer, or that Alcaraz was going to be the one, if any, who would look more comfortable. What do you think was the story of this match and this win for Zverev?
I mean, it was his serve. I don't think I've seen him serve, particularly his first serve, perform so well on such a stage as well, because he's got a shocking record against top 10 opponents at Grand Slams. And as a result, everyone was sort of writing him off against Carlos Alcaraz. But he came into this match and he just blew Alcaraz away in those first two sets. The percentages his first serving was at was incredible. 89% in set one, 90% in set two. It did drop off a little bit in set three at 78%, but then it rose again to 88% in set four. And it just meant that Alcaraz just was not getting a stranglehold at all in any of Zverev's service games. And it meant that there was just a lot of pressure applied to when Alcaraz was serving in his service game. So I would say it was a lot down to that. And it was scary at times. I was like, who is this Zverev? Because we don't typically see these performances from him at this stage of a Grand Slam.
Yeah, we've seen him crack out, you know, the massive serve with the high percentages before, but like not consistently and not at this stage of a Grand Slam. I think that the last time we saw him playing really well at a Grand Slam was that match against Nadal at the French, you know, where he had that awful accident. Yeah. And really, like, this was, I guess, similar in terms of his performance. But it's actually, yeah, it was his first ever win over a top five opponent at a Grand Slam. You know, he has been to a Grand Slam final back at the US Open a couple of years back. But, you know, even getting there, he didn't beat any top five players to get there. So it's actually quite a you know, new territory, really, for him to get this win over Alcaraz today. But he certainly deserved it with the way that he served. And, you know, he's just got to make sure he keeps those serving percentages up if he's going to have, you know, a chance to come through the semis and then, you know, fight for the win. And obviously, as you said, that's third set, his serving dropped off slightly. Alcaraz was able to kind of get back. You know, Zverev got a little tight, went to a tie break. Alcaraz upped his energy, upped his level. But when it came to that fourth set, you know, they were kind of neck and neck. And then Zverev just really, you know, pushed it up another level yet again when he needed it most. And he did well to make sure that that kind of blip at the end of the third set wasn't letting it affect him as the match wore on. Yeah,
I know. And I've got to admit, Kim, first of all, I actually went out to lunch with Zverev 5-2 up in that third set. And
I'd given up on Alcaraz.
Yes, exactly. And I came home and the match was still going on and it was in a fourth set. And I was wondering, uh-oh, what's happening here? Because Zverev has lost, you know, he lost the US Open Grand Slam final from two sets up. And I'm sure that might have been entering his brain going into that fourth set and just wondering, you know, Carlos Alcaraz, the athlete that he is, was he just getting going and, you know, was he going to come and steal this in five? And I think that again was so impressive from Zverev in terms of just mentally, yes, he did have a dip, but he didn't let that affect the result and he was able to, say, get it done in four sets. And I think, you know, the fact that he's played so much tennis just to get to this point, more tennis and more hours on the court than Carlos Alcaraz, I do wonder if that, you know, almost kind of simplified his strategy in the sense of, well, I've played a lot of tennis, I'm going to need to do these things very, very well to keep the points short, to put as much pressure on my opponent as possible. And he just knew, I think, that having a very good service game and a service day was going to put all that pressure on Alcaraz.
Yeah, and I was thinking actually in hindsight, you know, Zverev came through against Cam Norrie in that close five-set match, last set tiebreak. Cam, you know, in retrospect, given how well Zverev, you know, has seemed to have been kind of playing his way and improving as the tournament's gone on, you know, Norrie did really, really well, especially considering that loss. So I think positives for Cam Norrie as well. But the only thing with Zverev that, you know, he did have a medical timeout at the end of that third set. Should we be worried about a potential, you know, foot injury? He was having some treatment. Or do you think that was more of a, I just need a bit of a rest, maybe. I need to regroup.
I'm not sure. I mean, he was asked that by Jim Courier in the on-court presentation afterwards. And he was like, I'm fine. I felt Courier was like trying to dig deeper in a story that wasn't really there. And I even think before the match, as I say, he played a lot of tennis, you know, to get here. And that was a line of questioning in his press conference. And he said, you know, he said he's fine. He felt confident. And, you know, maybe he's, as I say, he feels like this is his moment. You know, he had that bad injury at the French Open. This is his time when, you know, he's worked his way back. He's worked very, very hard. And now he's reaping the rewards of it. And, you know, he's putting, I think, putting right one of those statistics that we always talk about, his you know, when it comes to the men's Grand Slams, is that record against top 10 opponents. Because it's up there, I feel, with, you know, talking about Andrei Rublev's, you know, lack of wins at the quarterfinal stages of Grand Slams, which we're going to get onto in the second half. But, you know, the fact that he can put that right now and hopefully build on that, I think it's a very, very exciting time for him in this season and moving on. And I think conversely with Carlos Alcaraz, after Wimbledon, I think he's only reached one tour level final in Cincinnati, not won any other trophy since. I mean, that wasn't something I think that was kind of written or that we were expecting, because I think we were just expecting from that Wimbledon victory that he would just kick on. Is it fair to say that he hasn't done that?
I think it's fair to say it's very difficult. You know, he's still very young. He's growing and developing. And yet he's, you know, he's already got two Grand Slam titles. So it's fantastic what he's already done. And maybe our expectations were raised so high. He set the bar so high for himself, perhaps too high. You know, he beat Djokovic in an epic Wimbledon final, surprised, you know, many people. And we thought, gosh, he's a miracle, you know. What this has, you know, no end to it. But I think he's probably just in that kind of natural down part of the cycle that follows such a kind of momentous win, and I'm sure he'll get back up there. It's just a matter of time. But yeah, it does seem that, you know, rather than Alcaraz, it's kind of Sinner that's been the man of the last 6 months, and I think that's part of the ebbs and flows of the sport. To be honest, so I think we'll definitely get back up there. No doubt about it.
I mean, it was very surprising. I say that first set, you know, really uncharacteristic errors from Alcaraz, particularly on the forehand side. I think that's been a weakness actually of his over the last few months, just kind of it being a bit erratic at times. And he just didn't really get going until that third set when he was down, and he needed, I think, to be more aggressive early on. Yes, I understand that there are times where your opponent's just serving too well and you can't do much about it, but you just want to kind of stay close to them, and he wasn't able to do that. And yeah, I think it's sort of, you know, I don't want to say back to the drawing board, but there's certainly things there I think that he can prove. And it does feel at the moment that we have Alcaraz, he's a Grand Slam champion. But, you know, in terms of the teams, we're talking more, I think, about Jannik Sinner, who's not a Grand Slam champion, as a bigger threat to the players around him, including Novak Djokovic. And I don't feel like we're there with Alcaraz where we were with him after he defeated Djokovic at Wimbledon.
Yeah, it was a little too late, I think, today for Alcaraz. And yeah, I think certainly go away. He's got a lot of work to do, and hopefully this will only motivate him to go back and do that, because he'll see that there was a gulf today in performance, and he was by far, you know, not the better player at all. But he's too good a player not to kind of put that work in. And, you know, he's got possibly, you know, another 15, 16 years on the tour. So I think we'll give him the time and space to do that in the meantime. And we'll enjoy the tennis that we do still have to be played in this tournament. I mean, talking about Zverev kind of fighting his way through with some, you know, tiredness, perhaps, you know, how fresh is he? He's up against Daniil Medvedev in the semi-final. Daniil Medvedev has openly said he's not fresh. He said after his win over Hubert Hurkacz that he was just destroyed. He was feeling it really, really tough physically, very tired. He was thinking about, like, his flight home, because I think he just thought he wasn't going to be able to get the job done.
I did really enjoy that insight from him when he was talking about I think it was like Rusevori when he was two sets down, and he was plotting his flight path home.
Airline pilot is actually like plotting the exact route.
Well, Kim, actually, all the storms at the moment in the UK, we're seeing some crazy diversions. I feel so. Maybe he's getting ahead of the game there.
Yeah, well, maybe it's better that he just stays fit in Australia because, you know, the world travel is not great at the moment. But yeah, 6-4 in the fifth over Hubert Hurkacz. You guys did say the other day that, you know, if it's going five, Hurkacz is not winning it. He's got to get the job done, you know, in 3 or 4, you know, make the most of his serve. But yeah, it did go deep. It did go late. And Medvedev came out on top. I feel like as well, you know, with Medvedev, he was saying how, you know, he's feeling very, very tired. He just, the match was going on and he was kind of started coming into the net, just stepping up a bit, starting to serve and volley because he just thought, well, you know, if I'm out of here, I'm, you know, flying home, I'll just go for it. Should he not just play like that from the off, maybe, Joel? Is there an argument that he's just, why get to this stage? Just have that as your tactic from the off. Maybe you're going to be more efficient, more effective, you know, and you'll stop yourself getting embroiled in these long matches. You know, he's spent 16 hours on court so far and he's just, you know, does he have anything left?
Yeah, I think it's tough. I think I would say that, you know, when you are feeling, say, lethargic and tired and out of gas, then it does force you to think differently. And maybe at the start, you know, maybe there was like some relative freshness there and he was like, right, I'm just going to go in with my normal strategy that I go in, you know, against someone like a very good server like Hubert Hurkacz. But the more it went on, I think there's a argument to say that the less energy you have, you know, the more you have to think about, okay, what are the most efficient strategies I am good at on a tennis court that can get me points and get me points quickly with short rallies. And as you saw with Medvedev, he decided to come to the net. And I think with Hurkacz, the more and more I was kind of watching it, especially in that fifth set, he just became a bit too passive for me. And it felt like he didn't really want it. And that was where, to me, that the experience of Medvedev, you know, getting to Grand Slam finals, going further than this stage, I think really kind of came to the fore. And I think it just showed that maybe he wanted it more and he was willing to adapt. And I think Hurkacz on the other side of the net was just sort of, you know, just playing the way he does and hoping that Medvedev was going to falter.
Yeah, I think Hurkacz, you know, he said afterwards that he was disappointed that he couldn't have done any more. And I think he needs to go away and do a bit of development work, doesn't he? Because in those situations, in those fifth sets, he's got to really step it up. And frustratingly for him, you know, he had quite a number of break points, but most of them were saves. He just wasn't able to get those opportunities when he had them. And so it wasn't that he wasn't generating them, it was just not kind of converting. And but you know, he did well to go I guess five sets, but with the serve that Hurkacz has got, you know, you're just waiting for him to kind of put it together fully and kind of make that Grand Slam final, because I think he can do it. He just needs that little extra.
It's a weird one, isn't it? Because I think, you know, there's an argument to say that, you know, some people look at him and think he's just a server, but actually he's got a lot more weapons than just his serve. You know, he's great. He's got great touch at the net. He moves very well for quite a tall fella on the tennis court. It looks like it's all there, but it's just like coming to these moments, particularly I'd say in that fifth set, when it comes down to like fine margins, small percentages, it seems to go to his opponent. And you know, I certainly think that there's, you know, there's going to be opportunities there in the future, but I just think, yeah, today it just slightly went, you know, the other way. And I think again he'll learn that he can't just sort of let these moments kind of pass him by. I think he needs to be, you know, a bit more aggressive. You know, we spoke about that with Cam Norrie and how he's developed that mindset, and you know, look where that took him. It pushed Zverev, it dumped out Casper Ruud, and I wonder if Hurkacz needs to be even more aggressive than at times we saw in that match against Medvedev.
Yeah, I think so. And so, well, Medvedev is through to another US Open, Australian Open semi-final. It's a hard court, you know. It's actually his eighth Grand Slam semi-final, his third in the AO. We've seen him at this stage, yeah, many times now. And I mean, we've seen him in the Australian Open final 2 times before. And he's lost both of them. So if he does get the win over Zverev, he he's going to be hoping for third time lucky. I mean, he does have a winning head-to-head over Zverev, 11-7. So they've played quite a number of times. Medvedev has won the majority of their kind of recent encounters. They actually did play quite a few times last year. Medvedev kind of came out on top in the last two, which were both on hard court. I mean, who are you going with? Do you think Medvedev's finally going to run out of steam? Do you think Zverev's that little bit fresher? If he's going to serve like he did today, you going Zverev, perhaps?
What I find interesting about this, Kim, is that although they've played lots and lots of times, I think they've played 18 times in total, they've never played at a Grand Slam before. This is going to be their first ever encounter in best of five at a Grand Slam. And I'm not going to lie, the more... You know, I think before the tournament, I would have, you know, backed Daniil Medvedev. You know, hard courts are his home. He's got an incredible record, you know, on them. The titles he's won, etc., etc. But that serving, I just can't get out of my head, that serving performance from Zverev against Alcaraz, if he can keep that up, I think he's going to have a very, very good chance of coming through, particularly because Medvedev, I think, will still be feeling the effects of that match against Hurkacz. I wonder if Zverev, as I say, he'll want to make sure that he has a very good serving performance. But I think on the Medvedev game as well, he just wants to keep the rallies going as long as possible. Maybe even bring in some drop shots. Just make sure he makes Medvedev move across the court. And I think he did that very well against Alcaraz, particularly with his volley game. I thought that was, you know, very, very strong. But yeah, I do think against Medvedev, I'm giving the slight edge to Zverev based on what I've seen in the quarters.
Yeah, I would agree. I think based on the Zverev serve, if he can keep it up and he hasn't, you know, peaked just in that one match, then I would give him the edge. But I think we could quite well see in another, you know, five set match. And actually, we've actually had the open era record for most five set contests at the Australian Open in this tournament.
It doesn't surprise me.
33 so far, Medvedev and Hurkacz being the 33rd. And yeah, so it's like we were talking about, I think, last week. You know, we were seeing a lot in the earlier rounds, especially just these grueling, draining, long encounters seem to be just, you know, increasing year on year.
Why do you think that is? Do you think it's just an outlier for the Australian Open, or do you think there's specific reasons we've seen so many in the men's singles draw?
Yeah, I think, you know, the balls, the weather conditions, the style of play is evolving, and I think it's kind of culminated. And, you know, perhaps there is a slight luck of the draw element. You just have kind of more matchups that are more equal, and like you've got, really can't find a deciding factor between two players. But yeah, it's certainly not great for the schedule when there's loads of five set matches, especially on the show courts, you know, pushing things late. And, you know, arguably, yes, a five set can be exciting, can be thrilling, full of roller coasters, ups and downs, but, you know, just because it's a long match doesn't mean it's always good quality. So, you know, is longer, you know, more dramatic tennis necessarily what we want to see increasing? Where are we going to maybe go for that conversation of should we play five sets? You know, it's come up in the past. Is that going to bring that argument back? I don't know. Maybe.
I personally don't think that's an award you want, or should be maybe even celebrated, because it just feels like that's too many. And because there are so many, I feel like there must be reasons for it. And as you pointed out, I do think it's to do with the conditions, a combination of things. But yeah, the conditions, the balls, the atmosphere and all that. It could be to do with, you know, the players. And actually, it's just very competitive. And, you know, lower ranked players are closing that gap on the higher ranked players. But yeah, I think there's things at play here that I think needs to be sorted out so this number actually comes down, because the exertions that it's putting on players who, you know, ultimately one person's going to have to go win seven matches to win this Grand Slam, I think it's too much. And yeah, I think that number needs to come down, or, you know, they need to alter conditions or whatever it is to give themselves the best chance to stop that. And I think it actually will make a better tournament because, as I say, scheduling becomes less of an issue. Players are more happy. Fans don't have to stay at 2 a.m. You won't see empty stadiums with like five people in their seats because it's so late, etc. So I would look at that as a statistic that I'm like, okay, let's try and bring that down next year.
Well, there are three men's matches left in the tournament. If they all go five sets, then they would beat the US Open 1983 record of 35 five-set matches. So we'll see if that happens. On the women's side today, we had two quarterfinals. We had Qin Wen Zheng against Anna Kalinskaya. This went three sets. Zheng battling back from a set down to win, get into her very first Grand Slam semi-final. It was 6-7, 6-3, 6-1. So as the match wore on, she just kind of started running away with it, winning the 10 of the last 11 games of the match after dropping that first set. Joel, Zheng now, joins the likes of Li Na and Zheng Ji in reaching a semi-final for Chinese, women's tennis. What did you make of her performance today?
It was actually a bit of a strange one, I thought. I did watch this match, and I do think one of the reasons she ran away with it was just simply that Kalinskaya, her body broke down on her. She was having treatment on her leg at the start of the third set, and it looked like it was impacting her movement. And actually, in that first set, she played a great set of tennis. Went to a tiebreak and she took it. And I wondered, are we on for yet another upset? In that top half of the draw. And I do think with Zheng, her serving could have been better. It wasn't the most complete performance I think we've seen from her, but certainly I think that she would seize the opportunity, since there was an opening from her opponent and took it, and has now got to a Grand Slam semi-final for the first time. That first set for me was very kind of up and down, and I did wonder if we were, if we were going to be talking about Kalinskaya being in the semi-finals.
Yeah, which, wouldn't have surprised me. I mean, Zheng is the 12th seed. She's by far the higher ranked of the two of them. But, Zheng, to get to this stage, she's played well, but she hasn't actually had to face a top 50 opponent. So, and obviously Kalinskaya's outside the top 50. So it is difficult to necessarily, compare players against, the higher ranked echelons when they haven't, placed up against them, and it sort of gets to the stage, it's anyone's for the taking, isn't it? But I think after dropping that first set, I was impressed with how she handled it. She didn't face a single break point in the second and third set. She was, quite clean, and just as it went on, just really kind of in full swing.
I think there maybe were a little bit of sign of nerves and tension in that first set, because I'll say that it's almost like she's the favourite now, in this top half of the draw. There's this expectation from nowhere, really, that she's, she's now expected to get to, the ladies' final from that top half. And I did wonder if that, that factored on her to begin with, and she was sort of, finding her feet. And and I don't know, as I say, Kalinskaya, I thought she played a very, very, very solid match. I mean, she certainly was kind of impacted by any sort of nerves, and it sort of felt like Zheng was chasing Kalinskaya to begin with, and then it sort of flipped, I think, and Zheng kind of took all the momentum away.
Yeah, and she is now a top 10 player as well. She will be in at number 10 in the rankings when the tournament finishes.
She didn't even know that. She was in the press afterwards, there on court, she was saying her team don't tell her anything, and she was like, I didn't know I'm in the top 10 for the first time.
Probably better that way. If it's going to make you think about the expectation and the pressure, maybe it's better not to know. Just focus on your tennis and getting the win in that particular match. And she's still super young. She's born in 2002, so she's got a big bright future ahead of her. So definitely one that has been on the radar. She reached the quarters at the US Open last year, so me and Chris did actually predict that she would go quite deep at this tournament, because she was looking at the draw. It seemed like she really could have that pathway coming through this section, and she's gone and done that. And let's see if she can go that one step further. And she's, as you said, she is the favorite to do that. She's up against Jastremska, next in the semi-final. So, you know, Zheng is the higher ranked player. She's high, you know, she's a seeded player. So all eyes will be on her. And, you know, she's going to have millions of people back in China, you know, watching and tuning in. So she's got, you know, the weight of her nation upon her. I mean, as will Yastremska, you know, obviously playing for Ukraine. So obviously both very passionate, I'm sure, to progress through to their first final. I mean, let's talk about Yastremska, because she came through against Linda Noskova in the earlier of the quarterfinals today. Again, a completely unseeded quarterfinal, this one is. 6-3, 6-4, straight sets. Yastremska through. Her dream run, doing a Raducanu. It's still on, Joel. What did you make of her today? Straight sets over Noskova.
I think this was more Noskova not playing as well as we've seen her this tournament. She was just nowhere near the heights that she played against Iga Świątek. And at this stage of her career, Noskova does give you that. She gives you that match. She is a little bit inconsistent, and Yastremska just took full advantage of it. She hit 19 winners. She was very, very solid on serve. Took the big moments, and she's now into the semi-finals. It's been very impressive from her. As I said, the way she started this journey, she was fighting for her life in the qualifiers, but you know, she's gone from strength to strength, I feel, in the main draw. And you know, Noskova, she'll be disappointed. You saw that in her body language, I think, and I do wonder. Almost her body language, I think, was too negative on the court. It wasn't, it didn't give me like any sort of positivity around, all right, I can actually do this. You know, she didn't shake the hand of the umpire, you know, at the end of the match. And I think she will be disappointed with, she just didn't bring the game that she knows that she is capable of playing. And I think that was one of the main reasons that Yastremska came out with the win.
A big learning curve for Noskova. You know, she's the younger of the two. They're both young, but she is much more inexperienced. You know, Yastremska's been on the tour a couple of years longer. She has been 21 in the world. You know, she's down at 93 at the moment, but she has been up at the higher end of the ranking. So she does have that bit more experience, albeit not a quarterfinal of a Grand Slam stage. I think Yastremska, you know, she took that moment, she took that opportunity. She's actually the first qualifier to have made the semi-finals here since 1978, so this doesn't happen very often. Like you said, it's only been Raducanu and Podorowska have done it in the last couple of years. So she's making history, which is, you know, fantastic. And I think, looking back, you know, she's beaten some Grand Slam champions, hasn't she? Vondrousova, Azarenka, she's beaten some top players. Obviously Noskova had beaten Świątek, but I feel like Yastremska, yeah. Perhaps also, you know, Noskova had that Svitolina walkover, played three games, and then Svitolina retired. That's going to disrupt your flow and your rhythm a bit as well. And I wonder if that made her slightly kind of rusty, maybe coming into the match as well.
Yeah, I think so. And it's interesting because you think that, you know, Zheng hasn't played anyone, you know, near the top of the rankings to get to this stage. Well, Yastremska, as you said, taken out Vondrousova, taken out Azarenka. Yes, she did step on court with Svitolina, but I feel like she is like battle tested with those qualified victories as well. Whereas you've got Zheng, who's not really been tested and has had lower ranked competition, and you feel like she's going to be in for a much different test when it comes to that semi final.
Yeah, I do wonder if Yastremska, just having played a slightly higher rank of opponent, maybe, yeah, like you said, more battle tested, ready to go. But we will see. We'll get on to previewing a bit of the women's semis later on. Just another news story from today, Joel. Some lovely, delightful
Chris made
news.
Made sure I put this in the script.
Well, he has appeared on our podcast previously. This is Rohan Bopanna. He has become the men's doubles world number one, or he will become the men's doubles world number one once the Australian Open has finished. He's officially the oldest world number one ever of any, I think, main discipline in tennis, bar the quad wheelchair rankings. But for men's doubles, he has by far exceeded what the previous
Mike
record
Bryan.
Age 41. Yeah, yeah, Mike Bryan, age 41. Rohan Bopanna, age 43 and 330 days old, world number one. I feel like by saying that, I'm just making him sound like I'm just like rubbing his age into it, but that's not what we're doing. We're just celebrating the fact that he's still going strong. You know, it's amazing, and he's credited his physio and yoga for helping with that. So I'm going to keep my daily yoga.
His yoga,
up.
Yes, his yoga. He said he thinks it makes him calmer on the tennis court. So maybe I should get involved in some yoga, Kim.
Yeah, I think you've done a bit in the past. I remember you saying that you have dabbled in it. I don't know if you want the listeners
to
know that.
I don't have the flexibility. I certainly have lost that flexibility that I did get from my few yoga sessions that I did over lockdown, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. So fantastic for Rohan there. And I think, you know, he's also Matthew Ebden, who he's playing with, also kind of has the same number of points, but Ebden has played more tournaments than Bapana, hence Bapana edges him in the rankings. That's how they sort of calculate it.
They've just got to go and cap it off now and win the men's doubles trophy. I feel like, I mean, it really is an incredible achievement, I think, from him in terms of longevity. You know, he's not done that much. If you look at his titles, his Grand Slam titles in doubles and mixed doubles, I think he's got one solitary mixed doubles crown, which he won with Dabrowski quite a few years ago. And I think, you know, at the time, everyone was a little bit like, oh, I'm glad he got his trophy before, his Grand Slam trophy before, you know, he retires. And little did we know, I think, you know, these years on that, he's reached the top of the tree. And it just shows, I think, with tennis generally, that you're getting these amazing athletes perform into ages that we did not think were possible. You know, we're seeing that, you know, with Novak Djokovic at the very top of the singles rankings. We've got Rafa coming back as well, and we're seeing it also in doubles. And it's just such an impressive feat, I think.
I think what's the most impressive thing is that he's becoming it for the first time. You know, it's whereas Mike Bryan, you know, he was 41 when he was number one, but that wasn't when he first got to the ranking. So that's the kind of the key difference. It's like, you know, he could have retired, but he's still going strong and at that, you know, doing the best he's ever done. So I hope he does get the double title. That would be a really, you know, the cherry on the cake. But let's take a very short break now. Do join us in the second half, where we'll be looking back on all the quarterfinal action from day 10 at Melbourne Park, and we'll also be looking ahead to the semi-finals, so do not go anywhere. Welcome back to the Tennis Weekly podcast. Now we're going to look back at the quarterfinals that we saw on Monday at the Australian Open. And that was Coco Gauff against Marta Kostyuk, as well as Barbora Krejcikova against Sabalenka, Djokovic against Fritz, and Sinner Rublev. Let's start with the ladies' quarters here. Coco Gauff coming through against Marta Kostyuk. 7-6, 6-7, 6-2. Coco Gauff battling through here. She didn't have it easy.
This was ugly, Kim.
Yeah. Is this the ugly match she just needed to get out of the way, Joel? Or are you concerned that she's not playing where she needs to play?
I mean, she's got Sabalenka next. She cannot play Sabalenka the way she played this match. I think she hit 51 unforced errors in this match alone, which was quite surprising, actually, because I think she's hit that similar number collectively in her first four rounds. So, you know, for this to happen was a little bit of a surprise, but I think this was just a case of just getting the W, just coming through it. And, you know, her coach, Brad Gilbert, he's got a fantastic book called Winning Ugly, and I think this certainly epitomized it. And I feel like if that book can get republished anytime soon, then this match maybe deserves a mention, because I think this certainly embodied it from Coco Gauff's point of view.
Yeah, she was 5-1 down in that first set, saved two set points, you know, clinched it on a tie break, but it, you know, she shouldn't have had to have fought back from 5-1 down. If she wants to win this title, she can't afford to play like she did in this quarterfinal. But like you said, like, it is just about getting the job done, getting that win. You know, she'll step on court maybe against Sabalenka in the semi, and you know, we won't see this sort of performance. So it, you know, it doesn't give perhaps the most confidence, but you know, we know what she is capable of doing. So I think the most important thing is that she got through the match against Kostyuk, who, you know, can be a very tough, tricky opponent when she's playing well.
Certainly. You hope it's just one of those you can just like come through, not have to think about it. And yeah, Aryna Sabalenka, I mean, she's going to be a completely different proposition to Marta Kostyuk. So I don't feel like, you know, there's going to be any sort of hangover, I think, from this match, because it's just going to be a completely different matchup, and it's going to require a completely different strategy when Coco steps onto the tennis court.
I mean, Coco Gauff does have a winning head-to-head over Sabalenka. You know, she beat her in the US Open final, so they have played quite recently. But Sabalenka has looked so far so good, you know, coming through all her matches in straight sets. She beat Barbora Krejcikova.
I mean, she's looked the best. I think she's looked the best in the tournament. And, you know, in the ladies' singles, and against Krejcikova, who I thought Krejcikova was going to give her some troubles. She's had some very good runs, you know, in the past at the Australian Open. She likes to play on this court, but when she came up against Sabalenka just had too much firepower. She had too much variety, and she just had too much control, because it was such a stroll in the park in the end for Sabalenka. And you know, to do that against a former Grand Slam champion, I think that was a real statement victory.
I mean, you can't bet against Aryna Sabalenka in a Grand Slam quarterfinal. She's played 8. She's won all of them in straight sets. So she loves a Grand Slam quarterfinal. Good record. Perfect record, in fact. And, you know, for the last 6 majors, she has reached the semifinals, all gone better. So she's really building this kind of Grand Slam consistent streak, which is fantastic.
Is she unstoppable?
Well, I mean, she is, in the sense she hasn't won the last 6 slams, but
she is unstoppable, you know, at the moment.
She's unstoppable, but she, you know, she doesn't want to kind of keep getting to these places and losing. You know, she wants that streak to matter more. Interestingly, Serena Williams is the last person who reached 6 or more semifinals in a row. She actually got to 10 in a row. So we'll see if Sabalenka can go further the rest of the season. But yeah, she'll be up against Coco Gauff, who does lead the head-to-head 4-2. So, I mean, you've got to think, both of them, they know what an opportunity this draw is with you know, Jung and Yastremska on the other side. They've both surely got to be thinking, if I can get through this, I'm you know, the strong favourite in the final.
Do you think they will be treating this as the ladies' final?
I mean, at their peril, I think that would be, you know, wrong to do so, because you can't take anything for granted. And, you know, the irony is you might, you know, win your semi and then, you know, kind of stroll into the final thinking, you know, I've got this. And then, you know, a surprise is sprung on you. But I think, yeah, like, deep down, I think most of the tennis community would certainly be thinking, yeah, surely the winner's coming from Gauff Sabalenka. They're both Grand Slam champions. They're both really in good form. We have seen some great tennis from both of them, especially Sabalenka this fortnight. And, you know, she does look like the hot favourite, I think.
I mean, weirdly, I feel like the only times we've seen Sabalenka in trouble was in that Krejcikova match, when she's so far ahead that she almost has, I think, a little bit of a lapse in concentration, and there is that opportunity for her opponent to come back in, because, you know, she was I think she was a double breakup, and you know, let Krejcikova retrieve one of those breaks. So I think from her point of view, she just wants to just keep on it, and you know, keep it on it until the handshake, and not let your opponent back in. But regardless of, I think that head-to-head, I'm sort of leaning towards Sabalenka, given, as I say, not necessarily the history of the two, but more in the here and now, the tennis I have seen over the last couple of weeks, it's hard not to think Sabalenka at the moment.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I think, yeah, it was only a bit of complacency against Krejcikova. She, you know, she lost her serve in each of the sets, but at that point she was, you know, a double breakup both times. So if you're going to lose your serve and drop it at any point, it's, you know, kind of a 4-2 when you're a double breakup. And she obviously stopped Krejcikova from getting any sort of momentum and clawing her way back in each of those sets. So far it seems like she's playing champion tennis. We'll see if that continues. Let's just quickly look back at the men's quarterfinals as well from Monday, because we did have Novak Djokovic in action against Taylor Fritz. Djokovic coming through in 4 sets, 7-6, 4-6, 6-2, 6-3. The scoreline kind of, I think, doesn't really tell the full story of the match. The first two sets took a very, very long time. 2.5 hours.
We need to talk about the scheduling at some point, Kim, because this was one of the... I mean, the golf match went on for 3 hours, and now this match also in the day session, those first two sets, I was wondering, are we on for a crazy, crazy, possibly even record late finish in the night session just because of... yeah, like the just going on the first two sets of this, because Taylor Fritz and his defense was very, very impressive, particularly how he played the big points, because I don't think I can remember this, but Novak Djokovic in those first two sets, he was 0-15 at one point on break point conversion. So it just shows, I think, how well Fritz was playing in those big moments. And yeah, he was frustrating Djokovic.
That's not a stat you hear very often, is it?
No,
Novak Djokovic, I don't think I've ever heard that before.
It's. I mean, it's obviously incredibly wasteful, but I don't think, you know, this was down to Djokovic. It was down to Fritz and just the way he played those points. And, you know, he really went for it, and you know, he got his due rewards when that second set, you know, that went to him. You know, he battled and battled to stay in, and then got the opportunity and grabbed his moment. And grab the second set.
Absolutely. And you know, Taylor Fritz, that opening game alone was like 16 minutes. So that was a sign of what we were in for.
Yeah, I know.
And I think really, you know, at two sets, you know, after two sets, it was a set each. We were thinking, oh God, what's going to happen now? But then that's when Djokovic, you know, really stepped it up. Those last two sets just... you know, coming through the champion mentality, 6-2, 6-3, you know, much more kind of standard.
The inevitability then set in, didn't it?
Yes, the fun and games were over for Taylor Fritz. You know, he fought on, obviously, not saying he gave up, but Djokovic, yeah, found that kind of extra bit to get the job done. And yeah, certainly started capitalising on break points there and, you know, stepping up his serve as well. But, you know, Taylor Fritz, I think, compared to where he has been in some of the slams recently, he'll be pleased, I think, to have got to the quarters, because, you know, anyone who's, you know, watched Breakpoint recently will know how gutted he was to lose early, you know, this time last year. So I think, you know, this is a positive
had very
slam
good tournament.
Generally getting to the final eight, and he'll be pleased with that. And it's no shame losing to Djokovic in four sets, is it, on this court in particular. Djokovic will, of course, face Jannik Sinner in the semi-final. Sinner coming through in straight sets against Rublev. Rublev now 0-10 quarterfinals at Grand Slams. He cannot get over that line, Joel.
No.
What could he have done differently in this match to have maybe achieved that? Because it seemed like he was up against it.
Win that second set tiebreak, I think, is one of them things from 5-1 up. That was really when the writing was on the wall, when, you know, Sinner clawed his way back and nabbed that tiebreak really from Rublev. The third set was really just kind of to me anyway, was just a little bit of a foregone conclusion. And you know, Jannik Sinner, I know we've seen at times ominous tennis from Novak Djokovic, but I've got to say, Jannik Sinner this tournament, I think he's played consistently the best tennis in the men's draw. And Rublev, unfortunately, I just think he was a little bit powerless kind of to do anything about it. He put up a good fight. It was close. He probably should have got a set, but similar story, I think, to how, you know, the Taylor Fritz match kind of panned out against Novak Djokovic. I think in the end, we were going to feel some sort of inevitability that, given the wave of momentum that Sinner is on, it was always going to end up with him in the semi-finals.
Yeah, I think that second set tiebreak, just kind of the main crux of this match. You know, Sinner coming back, like you said, from 1-5 down in that tiebreak to clinch the set. And I loved what Sinner was saying about that kind of tiebreak after. You know, he said, you know, it was tight, but he loves to play those pressure points. You know, he practices for that, he enjoys it, he says it's exciting. I think that's such a nice, healthy attitude to those moments. You know, rather than stress and panic, it's excitement, it's what you're there for. So I love his attitude.
It's not excitement, I don't think, for Rublev, who, you know, he was doing his classic banging his racket on his leg, getting frustrated. I still think it's going to come at some point. It just can't not. But at the moment, he is in that sort of perfect, I'm a top eight player in that bracket of maybe 5 to 8. Am I in that top four? No.
Especially, you know, he had breakpoint chances. He didn't take any of them. You've got to take your chances. You've got to maximise a 5-1 lead in a tiebreak. You can't afford to do that against the very, very elite players. And Jannik Sinner is playing like one of them at the moment. Very, very elite players. And he will be up against, you know, the most elite player of all, Novak Djokovic, in the semi-finals. We've got that semi that I guess we all wanted, because we really want to see what Jannik Sinner can bring to the court against Djokovic at a Grand Slam. You know, they did play at Wimbledon, the semis last year. They played in the ATP Finals final twice at that event. They played at the Davis Cup.
We were there for it.
We were there for that. We saw Sinner save match points and win that one. They were 2-2 last year. Djokovic has, you know, overall a better head-to-head against Sinner. But where are you thinking going into that one? Do you think Sinner can do the unthinkable, Joel?
Oh, it's tough. It's very, very tough. And I think, you know, I've just said on the Sabalenka kind of reasoning of, I think she's played the best tennis in the ladies draw, so I think she's going to defeat Coco Gauff. Although I think that about Jannik Sinner, I still have to go, I think, with Novak Djokovic, just because of the history. Yes, I know that Sinner has played well and has defeated Djokovic recently, and there may be some scar tissue there, but Melbourne is Djokovic's home. Rod Laver Arena is his home. He has got an incredible spell on this court, and it's very difficult to see, I think, you know, past that. But I do think we're going to be in for an absolute treat, given the tennis that we've seen from them and you know, what's at stake as well.
Yeah, I think I'm hoping it's going to be a classic. I'd love to see Sinner get the win, but I can't bet against Novak Djokovic, 10-time champion, semi-finals of a Grand Slam. It's very different to, dare I say, even, you know, Davis Cup best of three match. So I'm going Djokovic as well. Listeners, let us know. I mean, Chris must be believing in Sinner still, because he's got him as his champion overall.
I think that was that might have felt like a little bit of an out there prediction, but it looks like it could be very, very good. But it's hard not to think about Novak Djokovic. I mean, Kim, just before we get on to looking at day 12, we just need to talk about the scheduling for this day, because there was so much tennis crammed into, you know, one day. The night session started very, very late. I mean, they were almost probably breathing a sigh of relief that the Sinner Rublev match was straight sets, but regardless of that, it finished well after, you know, midnight. And it's, again, we're just in this situation of, I hate we're talking about the scheduling, but, you know, we have to. And do you think they handled it right in terms of holding their nerve and just keeping with it? Because, you know, there was talk of potentially moving, you know, one of the night matches to another court. That ultimately didn't come to fruition. Do you think they were right to hold their nerve despite the night session starting so late?
I mean, the day session started at 1 rather than 11, which didn't help. Mm. So they were already 2 hours down. And, you know, I get, once you get to the latter stages, you might think, oh, yeah, we could start slightly later. But when you're having that kind of gap, you've got to get one set of crowd out, one set of crowd in, and the matches go long and late. It's just you're asking for these late night finishes. And yeah, I just think just TV and money is ruling it, isn't it? It's there at the hands of the TV schedule and the sponsors.
Do you think the tournament organisers actually realistically care? Because they're thinking about the audiences and the numbers that are watching it, and how good it is for, you know, the rest of the world, you know, in Europe where it's on in our daytime.
They're thinking about the end product, the consumer who's tuning in all around the world. And but when that starts to interfere with player welfare, and, you know, it's a tricky one. And that's why we do keep bringing it up, because it's fundamentally something that, you know, I am a bit at odds with, as are many of us. It just doesn't seem natural to, you know, force someone to play tennis at 3 a.m. in the morning. And unfortunately, that's become pretty common throughout the history of this tournament, and even, you know, as we've seen in other tournaments. So we'll have to see the effect of the new, you know, rules that are coming in, what they will be. Obviously, this tournament unaffected by them at the moment. So, well, let's see. But yeah, it's important to kind of bring it up because it, you know, in what other world would you kind of force someone to, kind of
an elite
work
level athlete
night,
coming on?
You've chosen to do a night shift.
Exactly. It's a bit silly, and I think this is one of the biggest talking points we're going to take away, I think, from this Australian Open is in terms of. Because of, or I think one of the reasons is because of just how long some of the matches we are having. It's just having these issues with the scheduling. And if you want to split, you know, these matches over two sessions, get one crowd in, one crowd out, make as much money as possible, you're going to run into these problems. And it just doesn't feel right for elite level tennis and the product. It's not a good look.
No. I mean, let's have a look at tomorrow's schedule because the ladies, you know, it's a semi-finals day. They're both in the night session. So they are starting from 8:30, like GMT, 7:30, I think, local time in Australia. Goff Sabalenka's up first and then Yastremska Zhang. So, interesting. They're making them both night sessions, but obviously they will have that day in between, you know, before the final. And the final, I believe, is always a night session anyway. Prior to that, in the day, we do have the men's double semi-finals where we've got Rohan Bopanna, you know, new world number one in action with his partner Matthew Ebden. So the home fans will be loving that with Ebden.
Only seeds left.
Being Australian. They are the only seeds left in the men's doubles. They're up against Machak and Zhang. Bellelli, Vavasori, Hampfman and Kurtfer in the other men's doubles semi.
Ooh, it's like a Davis Cup semi-final, isn't it? Italy versus an all-Italian pair versus an all-German pair.
Absolutely, absolutely. Alfie Hewitt and Gordon Reid also in action on Margaret Court in the men's wheelchair doubles semi. So we wish them well. And they are also Alfie Hewitt in the semis of the singles as well. So good luck to Alfie and Gordon. But for the lady semis, who have you got, Joel? Who have you got winning and how many sets?
Well, Coco Gauff, Aryna Sabalenka. I'm going Sabalenka in two. I'm going straight sets. And Yastremska Zhang. Oh, it's tough. It's tough. I'm going to go Yastremska in three.
Oh, okay. Nice. Yeah. I agree with you to some extent. I'm going to go Sabalenka in two as well. I think she's just playing that extra notch up at the moment from Gauff. But I think Zhang Yastremska, that's again where I'm a bit like more on the fence maybe. I think Zhang in three. I'm going to go for Zhang.
Ooh, okay.
I think that sort of, I think her sort of higher level is going to be, you know, on its day better than Yastremska. Even though she hasn't played a top 50 player, I think she's going to get the job done. But it probably might be quite a messy up and down match, I think. We'll see. I'm going to probably regret that prediction. But, you know, it'll be fun to see them both tomorrow in our morning, Australia's night session. And then, you know, of course, we will have the men's semis on Friday. And we'll be back to round all the semi-final action up on Friday. Before we go, though, Joel, some other news, not Australian Open related, but Rafa Nadal related, which is very exciting for me, especially. Looks like he's going to be returning sooner than we thought to the tour. He's going to be playing in Doha in February at the 250.
This caught me off guard. Yeah, there were some reports because Laura Robson sort of spoke about this. And I think a lot of people sort of laughed it off because we just feel like we naturally associate injury and Nadal equals at least 6 months out or whatever. But very promising signs, the fact that he's going to be on the player entry list anyway for Doha, which, I mean, looking at it, it could be a very, very stacked draw for a 250.
Yeah, Daniil Medvedev, Andrei Rublev, also
Andy Murray's going to be there.
Andy Murray and Rafa, who is, still down at 446 in the rankings, which sounds so strange to say. But yeah, well, hopefully he will be back. And hopefully that's good news that he's feeling good. And the injury he sustained in Australia, you know, perhaps wasn't as as bad, and he's just like wanting to get back out on the tour. So let's see. We wait in hope. But yeah, myself and Chris are due to be back on Friday. I'm off to find some Vegemite in all the local supermarkets, Joel.
The quest for Vegemite begins. Yes, I'm going to do the same. Let's see what we do, and let's see if we can come up with some. But listeners, I hope you've enjoyed our latest episode of the Tennis Weekly podcast. Remember to subscribe to us to stay up to date on all the action still to come from the Australian Open. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. And if you like what you're hearing, then make sure to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
You can also follow us on social media or email the show. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and YouTube at Tennis Weekly Pod. You can also purchase Tennis Weekly merch at etsy.com/shop/tennisweeklypodcast and email the show as well, tennisweeklypod@gmail.com. And do also check out our website, tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we will be back on Friday at Tennis Weekly HQ for our semi-finals AO catch-up. So I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Kim.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon.